What I wanted to talk about today was perception. I've really been thinking a lot about it lately, and I told Mike, our teacher here, that I had this talk rolling around my head. So then all of a sudden he's like, okay, I got you penciled in. And so then as I was like doing all these different things, thinking about things and asking questions, and all of a sudden I was like, wow, that's really good too. I really like that. And pretty soon I realized, like last night, I think it was when I finally realized I had two talks, really. And I shouldn't really put them all together. So it's interesting, and I will just touch on it, but I won't like make you guys sit here for too long. So now I'm going to try to slow down because my feeling right now is like, so the definition of perception, the act of apprehending by means of the senses or of mind, cognition, understanding. It's been amazing to me lately when I think about perception, and I feel like it's like this slippery slope. You know, it's so easy. You have this perception, and it could be a wrong perception, and you're so convinced about your perception that you kind of lose touch with the reality. And I remember when I first started sitting, a lot of you know my son Abijah is the one that brought me into this practice. And you know, so, but before that, I used to call him and I used to be like all in the middle of this thing. Oh, God, what do you think of this? He goes, Mom, I think that's just the story. That's just your story. And I'm like, you know what? Forget about that. Don't talk like that. Okay, it's just a story. Well, tell me what you think about the story then. You know, this just bothered me because I wanted to hear his opinion on something and he wanted to be all zen on me. You know, so I remember I used to get so irritated. So then he would find a way to like not use those buzzwords that got me irritated, but to kind of just kind of help me know how to hold it, this situation I was in. So it was an interesting curve that I went through before I even ever came here. Karen mentioned last week, you guys missed a great talk, some of you who aren't here, and fearlessness. And when she mentioned fear, I could so relate to that, and I'm sure that everybody has had a time where you just feel so afraid. Like I remember times when I was raising my kids, and mostly I did that alone, and I would just feel like, you know, what we were going through, we would never get through. My perception was, we can't get through this. It's too big. It's too much, and I would feel that burning stomach and the heart-wrenching, overwhelming feeling of fear. It was like I didn't know what to do with it. How do I tell my kids to relax and to believe that we're going to get through this when I can't see how we're going to get through it? And I was telling Karen after her talk that, you know, it reminded me that when we would go through those things, I have a religious background. I was kind of in a strong fundamental group, will say that. I usually call it a cult, but anyways, there's a scripture, this too shall pass, and so I would bring that, and I would sit the kids down, and I would just, you know, remember when we were going through this, and we never thought we'd make it through, and now it's just like this distant memory. This too shall pass, we're going to get through this, and it was the way that I helped us all to gather our wits about us and be strong and get through it and have it become that memory. I don't know what you call it, a blip or something in the screen. You know, it's just so it was a really emotional thing for us. When you're clouded by the wrong perception, you know, it takes you so far from where you need to be. It's really, it was really quite a, we went through that a lot. Now, Abijah wrote me a beautiful letter. Before I even came here, he wrote me a beautiful letter saying I was his first Dharma teacher because I taught him the law of impermanence with that, you know, this too shall pass. This is the law. You know, I love the way the teachings all kind of intermingle and you can use different things and it just kind of all blends in. I had a really funny thing that happened to me. And you talk about how a wrong perception. Okay, so this is the based on the stimuli of smell. So at my daughter's house, I just have to share this because it's the funniest story. And it was so weird how you can totally get enwrapped up with the senses and with what you're perceiving and find out that you're so off track. So I'm at my daughter's. We go to the park. She's got an SUV, so we get to take her dog with us. We're all, you know, she's all excited because finally Buddy gets to come. So we go. We have a good time at the park, you know, and we get back in the SUV, and we're driving around. She's like, she smells an offending odor. And so she's sure that something's gone on with Buddy. She needs to pull. I just have to pull over. So she checks on Buddy, and Buddy's fine. So Buddy must have to go for a walk because this offending smell has just got her convinced. So she takes Buddy out, and he just kind of stands there, wags his tail, sits down, like, now what? So she's like, okay, it's nothing. Everybody, check your shoes. Check the bottom of your shoes. Somebody stepped in it, you know. So I'm like, I'm so convinced that I know I didn't, because I'm walking with a cane and I have to be very deliberate with my steps. I know I didn't. And it was so funny. So she's planted these seeds of, you know, this is dog related, period. Never mind that she's got a 9-month-old baby in the backseat. Yeah. So we're sitting here and this goes on. And it's like, I was talking to Doug about it, and he's like, it's like you guys were intoxicated on the wine of delusion. I mean, we were so intoxicated that it took about 2 hours to finally check on poor baby Ella, because she just was convinced it was dog related, so she kept checking, you know, and then she's like, Mom, lift up your shoes, I know it's on the bottom of your shoes, you know, and so it wasn't. And then she had, finally, Ella started getting a little fussy. Ella had been quite content, but Ella started getting a little fussy, so she picks her up and realizes the smell follows her. So, anyways, but I thought it was a really interesting and kind of funny way how, and a harmless, pretty harmless. I mean, Ella wasn't too happy, but it was a pretty harmless description of how wrong perception can get you so far off track from the reality that stares you in the face if you just open your eyes. Another misconception or wrong perception is I'm still on a cane and I still have pain, and I get so drugged down by that sometimes. I know, I feel like people around me are like, wow, are you ever going to get better? And I say to myself, am I ever going to get better? And it's like Karen mentioned, chronic pain, you know, I just have to take one day at a time. That I do get this feeling, that this perception that I'm not moving forward. And I had a wonderful thing happen, I think it was just last weekend or the weekend before. Tanya and I, she's a resident here, and she's got a dog, and I've got a dog, and we went to Santa Cruz Beach, and I walked. The plan was she was going to take my dog, because my dog likes to run, her dog likes to play frisbee, and I wouldn't have to walk in the sand, because in March, I had taken two steps into the sand, and I was in so much pain, I just couldn't handle it. I just had to stand on the sidelines of the sand and toss the frisbee for, you know, 15 or 20 minutes, and we were out of there. And it didn't take me until later that night. I had walked Racy all the way across the deep sand to the water. We walked along the water's edge, and I walked all the way back to that deep sand. And yeah, I looked kind of, you know, hobble along Cassidy. You know, I kind of am limping, and you know, and it's painful, but I could do it. And so that night, we were having dinner, I was like, Tanya, do you realize that in March, I couldn't even take a foot into the sand, and I was just stopped by it, and I was able to actually do all of this, and it was just so awesome, like, what? And like she said, wow, you really are getting better. And I think that it's so easy to get caught up in this misconception that, you know, that I'm not healing, because I'm still using this cane, I'm still crutching along and dealing with my body, this body that I have. So it was really exciting for me, and I shared it with our teacher, Mike, and he said it was a lot like the monk that goes out in the mist or the fog and doesn't know he's getting wet. And he walks, and he walks, and he walks, and he gets to his destination, and his robes are, you know, just soaked from this fog that he's walked through. And I thought that was just a really beautiful correlation. I really appreciated that, because, you know, I get stuck on that sometimes. So that was really good for me, and I appreciated it. I appreciated knowing that I've had a wrong perception about how far I've actually gone, which is important to kind of get straightened out every once in a while, so you don't get bogged down. Let's see. I wanted to talk about how many people, when they first came in to this practice, have a hard time bowing. I did.
Oh, now?
Yes. Physically or?
Physically.
Okay, well, physically. Oh, okay. I mean, like right in here. I had this background. Like I said, I was a church lady for a while. So I came in. This is like an idol. This is like a graven image. This is not, what are you guys bowing to? And I was really put off by it. And I would come in here and I would do it because I was with Abijah. I'm not going to cause a scene. And I'm not one to really want to do something. You know, I want to do what I'm supposed to do, at least in front of everybody. Worry about how I feel about it later. So, you know, I would go ahead and bow. And finally I said to Abijah, how can you stand to bow to this graven image? I don't get it. And he's like, I'm not bowing to Buddha. And I'm like, well, yeah, you are. And he's like, no, I'm bowing to my awakening. And I was like, whoa, that was a really heavy revelation for me because it had been a real, you know, hitch in my get-along through this whole process because it was such a big thing for me. And I didn't really want to talk about it because I felt, you know, uninformed, which I was told, and I had the wrong perception. And so now to be able to bow to my awakening, to our awakening, makes it so much better. This is one that I started going off on. I started interviewing people. I got some great responses. Drew, I have to share your response. I was wondering about the incense and putting the incense in the little fire. And what is that for? And Drew, in his beautiful Zen way, says, I don't know. It feels right. Smells good. I'm like, that's cool. But, you know, I got so many various responses to this that I feel like it's a whole nother subject. So, but I just wanted to say that misperception that I had could have, you know, just like made me forget about it. So it was interesting. It's just interesting how a wrong perception can trip us up. It reminds me when I lost my brother, he was 11. And I got a phone call from my aunt. I was 17. And I remember, like, you can't comprehend this. And then we were driving up to get to my family. I didn't expect that. And I just saw these people driving by, and they were laughing. And the sun was shining. and it was so weird to me, because and my perception is that the world should stop right now. How is the world not stopping? You know, and it took me years to really get through that and accept it and be able to put it in its place and know that, you know, death is part of life. I went through a time where I hated life because if it's part of life, then I hate life. You know, it was really hard for me to incorporate that whole, you know, death, this journey that we're all on that's going to end in death. It was really hard for me to assimilate that and to not have this really big anger about it, and so it was another perception. I was so deep in this perception that I actually turned my back on every, you know, I cut myself off from feeling, really, for a lot of years. I was just kind of I had wall up, and it was just based on this perception that, you know, that this is just the worst thing that could ever happen to someone, you know. And then so it's become easier for me. And I just, because that perception was so strong about people laughing in their cars and the sunshine. Remember that song, Why Does the World Go On Spinning? Do you remember that song? Why do these eyes of mine cry? Don't they know it's the end of the world? It ended when Todd died, is what I said. But it was like, that's all I could think of, was how you know. And so it was a really big thing for me as a 17-year-old to process that and to keep moving forward. I also have noticed lately how easy it is to get caught up in a wrong perception. You know how Abilene was just tossing those seeds out when it came to, you know, she was so stuck on that stimuli of smell that she could not let it go. And she knew that this poor baby, it was not due to this poor baby, it was dog related. And I noticed that sometimes with me, I end up having a wrong attitude about someone, or I'm no longer able to see them for who they are or meet them because I have either it's either seeds that have been tossed out and, you know, comments made. This is where the right speech, I think right speech must be one of the hardest things in this whole practice, because you have to be so careful. And so we toss out these seeds so randomly and so casually. And sometimes if we're not careful, these seeds take root and they become like really deep rooted. And then, you know, I find myself, what's great for me is I've been getting physically stronger as I walk Gracie 3 times, 4 times a day. And it's a great time for me to really examine myself. And I have found that I have to constantly check myself and do a self-inventory and, you know, figure out what is this coming? Why do I have this attitude towards someone? You know, it doesn't feel right, but why is it there? You know, so then I'll figure out, well, it was based on a judgment call that I just fleetingly had or something I heard or, you know, it's so easy to get this wrong perception going on. And it keeps us from being able to be our authentic selves and to see people, the bodhisattva in everybody. It keeps us back from so much. And so this has been the main thing on my mind is when I told Mike I had a talk going on, it was just like, I just realized how careful we need to be in this practice, and because we want to keep the precepts. And, you know, not only do we break them when we speak ill of someone, but we also are planting seeds randomly in other people, you know, and so it's something where I feel like we kind of have to be on a constant watch and making sure that nothing's growing in there. That's how I put it. Nothing's growing in there. You know, I'm always, when I'm walking and I'm like, okay, where did that come from? Yeah, sometimes I don't even remember where it came from, but I know that it's a wrong perception because I'm not seeing the bodhisattva in someone. So it doesn't matter where it came from so much as what am I going to do with it now that these seeds have taken root? You know, and so it's a process that I go through as I'm walking Gracie through this beautiful mountain and just kind of weeding out, you know, these wrong perceptions. And I accidentally found this great passage in Thich Nhat Hanh's Answers from the Heart, which Jerrell kindly gave me. He says that mindfulness increases concentration and allows us to see things more deeply and stop being victims of wrong perception. That was so cool. I just found that last night. It was just an accident. It was just so great because it really wrapped up what my whole thing is about. You know, we don't want to be victims to wrong perception. It can totally keep us from a great reality and a great life, really. So, yeah, the only thing I haven't figured out yet is, you know, how do we pull out those seeds, those weeds, those plants from our opposing political view? I can't figure that one out. If anybody has any ideas on how to be equanimous with that whole thing, please let me know. That's all I have.
I was just going to ask you, how do you weed out wrong perceptions of people, like, that kind of are in the way of seeing them as a bodhisattva from like a particular issue that you have with that person that needs to be resolved?
Well, you know, what I usually do is I play devil's advocate and I try to look at through that person's view or where that person, you know, like I try to get outside of my judgment, outside of what has been taking root in my heart, and just try to look at this person and see, you know, what there's always, you know, and I used to teach my kids this, and how silly of me to fall into this, but I used to teach my kids, they would come home and they would be talking about someone, calling them names, and I would just be floored, and I'm like, don't ever let me hear you call someone a name like that, because everyone is reacting to some pain that they go, everyone is reacting to something. They're reacting to some abuse maybe or some pain. I don't feel personally that people are just bad. I believe that when someone is acting out in a way that you can find a label for, that they have experienced something traumatic and deep and that they're suffering. And so that helps me totally to pull out, you know, what my wrong perception is about them and start letting them be who they are, you know? But that's the thing that was the most important thing to me is knowing that, believing, that's my belief. I don't know about anybody else, but I believe that people are good, that people react to their hurts and their circumstances and their experience. And so that's what I taught my kids, to always remember that before they judge someone or call someone a name.
That's what I very much appreciated in understanding that ignorance is the problem, rather than just saying there's evil in the world or something, because evil sounds like some kind of an entity that, that is just doesn't have any, there's no way to appreciate it or to really understand it, whereas if we sense that ignorance is a major problem, that's what you were saying, people have suffered in some way, and their response to their suffering is not fully informed or not,
right,
not the wisest way, and so it affects other people negatively. So ignorance is helpful way of seeing things.
Oh, and such a more eloquent way to put it. Thank you. Thank you, Jerome.
Well, I can always pull out a Coben quote.
Okay.
I've spent the last 15 years reading those.
Oh, yes, you have.
And he said that when he saw someone doing a wrong action or upsetting, remember that it was himself, and that if he had been in the position that that person was in, meaning, you know, have that karma, had sort of gotten stuck in that place, that he would do exactly the same thing, regardless of how evil it appeared to be.
Right, wow.
So that, therefore, it comes back to yourself.
Yeah, that's really great. I like that. Thank you.
Then when someone does some wrong action, you should apologize.
Who do you apologize to? Who do you apologize to?
I made a comment on bowing. Just something I think I remember being told a long time ago. To think of bowing as when you're bowing down, it's acknowledging your interdependence and your unity with all things. And when you're sitting up straight, it's sort of proclaiming your independence and your ability to influence your own destiny. And so by doing them together, it's kind of a statement of not one and not two, or
wow,
it should be one and two, kind of that,
yeah,
that thing that's a metal to,
wow,
practice. So that's what I think about every time I bow, actually, is to kind of,
wow,
claim that to myself.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Did you learn that from your mom?
Well, I'm sure there was some relationship. I think I learned that from Phil, who was the person that I first meditated with, which would have been at her house.
Oh, wow.
35 years ago.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's really beautiful. I like that.
These people know Phil, or is he?
Phil Olson. Did you know Phil Olson? Haiku Zendo. He was ordained priest by Coben.
He lived there back in the 70s.
Yeah.
He didn't.
I think he probably did. Yeah.
See it about her.
Phil is sounding good.
I apologize for that.
Well, I think that sounds pretty good. So I really appreciate that.
So, you know, this idea of how we perceive the world really is important, you know, because it affects everything. It affects you, and it affects other people, how you treat them. And it's something that I'm working really hard on in Zazen, because when I sit, I really try and dissolve those perceptions, those opinions, those judgments, and keep cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
I just think of like scrubbing my mind of the opinions.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what those are, reactions and perceptions, and you don't know what you're perceiving, how constructed it really is, because you're the constructor.
Right.
That makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense.
Yeah, and so I think that's just something that I'm trying to do now, is also just work on that and constantly clean my mind of you.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing the stuff that will start taking root in there if you don't constantly do a self inventory.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And when you're dealing with
it's kind of, to me, I don't know, maybe I'm just evil, but to me it's like a constant thing. I have to constantly do this, cleaning or this, weeding or whatever you want to call it. Because I don't wanna just come and sit just to look good. You know what I mean? Not that I look good when I do it, but you know what I'm saying. I'm not doing this, Michelle. I'm really trying to incorporate this practice in my life. It's a beautiful practice. And so it really does, for me, require constant self-check.
And it really is practice.
Yeah.
It's not just something that you say, oh yeah, I know what to do.
Yeah, right.
But you have to do it over and over.
Yeah, over and over and over, yeah. That'll be nice. Won't it be a nice? Will we ever have a day when we won't have to? I don't know. Will we, Mike?
Tomorrow.
It's great. I really appreciate everybody's input.
I was thinking when you were talking that sometimes perceptions or views or opinions become a kind of property. People kind of own them.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
And particularly if they're kind of habitual or they become ingrained. Mm-hmm. And I think that cleaning that you talked about is like almost coming back to your room and finding out it's a little too crowded in there. And you need some walking space or breathing space or something. And they're almost like possession, aren't they, those views? I want to be simpler or poor again, poorer. Unless they're not a little poor in spirit.
They shall what, inherit heaven?
Yeah.
Inherit the earth. Heaven, there I go again. That church lady back there.
Also, that sometimes if we look deeply at opinions, they're all involved in the process of selfing, making a self or maintaining a self, or keeping a view of a self, maybe self-importance. So sometimes in our practice, we can get some insights into, why am I holding on to that view? And then kind of, in softening that view, we can realize that we're actually softening.